This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Trade, technology, and tariffs all top of the agenda this week. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. In Shanghai today, the Mobile World Congress brings together top tech companies. But the U.S. blacklisting of China's Huawei means that company expects to lose $30 billion over 2 years in sales. And Apple wrote last week that U.S. tariffs would weigh on its global competitiveness, pushing up prices by 15% across the board, according to analysts. Estimates. Thomas Gift is lecturer of political science at University College London.
I think we could be reaching an inflection point in economic relations between China and the United States as a result of these tensions. I think it is the case, if a deal isn't brokered, that it's very possible we'll get a decoupling of U.S. and Chinese economies in terms of the tech firms. And that has all sorts of negative implications for the economic health, both of the United States, China, and other parts of East Asia.
And the global economy, because these global supply chains for tech are pretty integrated.
That's absolutely the case. Firms are kind of scrambling to change where they're actually manufacturing a product. So several companies, including Apple, are looking into moving production to India or Vietnam. But because of the scale and complexity, that's very difficult to do. In the short term, it's very likely that this will just lead to an increase in cost that is going to be passed on to consumers.
Now, we see President Trump and President Xi at the G20 this weekend in Osaka, Japan. But is there any optimism that they're going to find solutions? Because it feels like the tensions have just been ratcheting up and there hasn't really been a breakthrough.
I would agree with that. And in fact, I'm relatively pessimistic. Donald Trump really has an incentive, especially going into the 2020 election, to look tough on China. From China's perspective, they can afford to be a little bit less sensitive to what the consumer population there want, simply because it's a non-democracy. And so this allows them to be a little bit more long-term in terms of their orientation.
Thomas Skiff there. Let's do the numbers. Global stock markets were broadly flat after top officials at the U.S. Federal Reserve dented hopes for a big interest rate cut next month. The FTSE 100 in London is up 0.1%. Now, U.S.-India bilateral trade more than doubled to $142 billion in 2018, compared to a decade earlier. But President Trump wants the balance of trade currently in India's favor to change and for U.S. goods to face fewer tariffs and barriers in such a huge market. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke after his bilateral talks today in New Delhi, making the case for cooperation to balance China's investments in Belt and Road, its new global trade route.
Great friends are bound to have disagreements. The United States has been clear we seek greater market access and the removal of trade barriers in our economic relationship. Look, we've got to get this piece right, the economic piece right, because there are a myriad of opportunities. Countries in this part of the world which have signed on to the Belt and Road projects have found Beijing's deals come not with strings attached, but with shackles. Countries are looking to provide infrastructure, digital connectivity, and energy supplies to their people without relinquishing their sovereignty. We, together, should act quickly to fulfill the ambitious vision for prosperity that's shared by President Trump and Prime Minister Modi, not just for our own people, but for the good of the region and the world.
Mike Pompeo. A new economic threat haunts Central and Eastern Africa, Ebola, the deadly virus that infected 28,000 people until 2016, has arrived in the Democratic Republic of Congo and is spreading with alarming speed. It's killed more than 1,500 people there, and the first cases in neighboring Uganda were confirmed last week. The BBC's Claire Williamson explains the impact of Ebola in the region.
Ebola is ravaging Eastern Congo, and the region is on high alert for this highly contagious and fatal disease spreading. Screening checks are now in place along the borders of the DRC and Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda and Burundi. the biggest economy in the region, Kenya, is also taking preventative action. Health Services Officer Joshua Arusi explains the controls in place between Uganda and his country.
We have two screening points right now for those who are coming in by using buses and small trucks. And we have another one whereby we are screening the locals who are going to maybe Busia Uganda market and then come back. And we also take history about the country of origin, places that person has visited when he was in Uganda or Congo.
The economy of the DRC has been brought to its knees by years of conflict, and cross-border trade is limited. But travel across the long border is common. This taxi driver, working on the Ugandan border with DRC, is fearful of the disease.
Me personally, I fear Ebola a lot, because it has finished us here at the border. We, as motor taxi drivers, are asking to receive help, like protective gear, so that we can drive safely. We fear Ebola a lot. It has crossed from Congo to Uganda.
A preventative vaccine is being trialled, but measures like avoiding contact and limitations on group activities are being promoted by officials throughout East Africa. Dr. Kaifala Mara was Minister of Finance for Sierra Leone during the Ebola crisis, and he says acting out of fear can be very damaging for a country's economy.
Economic activities are normally driven by social interactions, people negotiating and buying and doing negotiations. For example, footballing activities, games and sports across the country were all suspended. Schools were closed, including universities. So it brought the whole economy down to its knees.
More than $2 billion was wiped off the economies of Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone in Western Africa during the last outbreak. It's hoped that trade will not be lost this time just from the uncoordinated, if understandable, efforts of people to avoid becoming infected themselves. I'm the BBC's Claire Williamson for Marketplace.
Finally, climate change is forcing drivers on Germany's Autobahn to slow down. Unseasonal temperatures of 101 degrees mean authorities have imposed rare speed limits on the otherwise speed limit-free highway. They're worried about high temperatures creating deadly cracks in the road. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.